want that normal, dog. I don't want that normal. I don't want that normal. I don't want never ending war. But let's, all right, guys. Thank you for coming.
Speaking of war.
Thank you for coming back to another episode of Hardfire History. We appreciate you. You don't appreciate us. We would. I love you. All right. That's fine. Thank you guys for being here. Guys, like, follow, share all our stuff. Subscribe. Mm-hmm. Follow us on everything. But without further ado, we're going to get into this week's episode. Yeah, we had to take a break last week because of failing infrastructure in Texas.
Because we're rugged individualists, goddammit. That's why we're taking a break. Okay.
This week, we're back. And we're continuing our Black History Month package with the figure today, and that figure is the King of Kings, Haile Selassie. King of Kings, Haile Selassie. You familiar, Henry, with the King of Kings?
I thought Jesus was the King of Kings, man.
I mean,
that's what I thought the phrase was
from. I mean, some people say this might be the second coming of Jesus. Some people say that. Some people who your white friend tries to convert to their religion and starts wearing red, yellow, and green all the time. But he doesn't understand the tenets of the religion.
Does his hair in dreadlocks.
Yeah.
And he's always posted up in the yard of a house that you pass by when you walk home. And you wonder why all the cool kids are at that house and why they're always
smells
hanging
funny
out in
the
garage
here
all the time. And it smells a little weird. It
smells weird.
The girls
want to
hang out there. His name is Paco, and he brings his fucking acoustic guitar to school sometimes. And he has dreadlocks, so you can't really knock him for bringing the acoustic guitar. But, you know.
Everybody
wants to get to know Paco until you get to know him. And then you're like, wow.
Here's the thing about Haile Selassie. I have no information on if he smoked weed or not. I have no clue about that.
Okay.
But he looks like a man who has never touched a joint in his fucking life.
I've seen some pictures. He looks a little straight and narrow, you know what I mean?
He looks straight down the fucking narrow.
it looks like he's part of the DARE program, you know, a DARE proponent.
He looks very straight and narrow. And guys, without further ado, we're going to get into Haile Selassie, King of Kings. The book that I read for this episode is going to be by Asfa Wilson Asarate, King of Kings, The Triumph of Haile Selassie, of Emperor Haile Selassie the First of Ethiopia. This book is Asfa Wilson Asarate. He's like a kid of like a kind of, or not aristocratic, but like kind of a bureaucratic higher up. So he's writing from kind of the purview of what would intentionally be the upper class in Ethiopia. He's writing from a person descended from that. And, you know, he was there fucking in the 60s more when he was coming of age. And I think going off to college and all that type of stuff like that.
Okay.
And then I think he's lived. I don't know if that nigga's still alive, but I hope he's still alive. What's up, Asarate?
How you doing, man?
Asfa Wilson Asarate.
This is also brought to us the suggestion for the episode. Who pointed us this direction is supposedly our number one fan, Dominic Goulding over there in the United Kingdom. Thank you for the suggestion. I hope you enjoy the episode. I hope B117 is not kicking the UK's ass too bad, you know?
I really hope that we can also do a good enough job to where you're just like, oh, y'all are a sham. Like,
you butchered it.
You butchered the man.
you butchered the man.
All right. So in order to understand Haile Selassie, you have to understand the Ethiopian Empire. And in order to understand the Ethiopian Empire, you have to understand that the Ethiopian Empire comes from this place called, or is interchangeable with this place called Abyssinia, which is in antiquities, which is like a word that I just learned and I keep using.
Good word.
In ancient history, is an empire and kingdom on the Horn of Africa. Abyssinia shows up in Greek antiquities. It shows up all over Middle Eastern antiquities. Abyssinia is a historical place that was situated in a lot of the literature that we know. And to understand why Haile Selassie has the claim to the throne of Ethiopia, or can say, because ascended, one thing you have to know about being king in Ethiopia in these times is you have to be part of the Ptolemaic bloodline. And that means that you are descended. That's where everybody from the Ethiopia that tried to be Ethiopian king was descended from Solomon from the Bible. So because there's a I don't know if it's in the Bible. I don't know what I don't remember. I don't really know. But
which
Solomon
one is Solomon.
I Solomon's like a distant cut. Like if I have this right, Solomon's the son of David. And then if you split David,
which David,
Jesus, like the King David,
okay,
of the Bible, like the main David, the big one,
the big dog,
the David.
The Dave.
So David has a son named Solomon, and this is the Bible is a book of contradictions. I'm a Christian. Mm-hmm. I'll say it. Like,
okay.
And in I think in Matthew, it has Jesus being descended from Solomon.
Okay.
And then I think, and then in Luke, it has Jesus being descended from Isaac, which is a son, another son of David. Like, you know what I mean? So technically, in this kind of like history of Ethiopia, mm-hmm, the Queen of Sheba, which I'm pretty sure is from Abyssinia, I'm pretty mm-hmm sure.
That sounds right.
Goes and meets up with Solomon. They have a baby. They fuck it out. You know what I mean? They have a child. That child is named Menelik the First. And then every Ethiopian king, in order to have a claim to the throne, must be related to Menelik the First. And by therefore being related to Menelik the First, you're related to Solomon, Solomon to David. And then by whatever, you are a cousin of Jesus the Christ, the Lord, how you get your claim to the throne in Ethiopia. Haile Selassie the First, getting into
can
his
you get,
life,
like grandfathered into heaven if you're related to Jesus.
I don't
Do you still
know.
Have to be a good person, or
I
you're
don't.
Like, nah, man, I'm of the royal blood.
I don't
got a free
know
pass on this one
because
I
I'm
slide
just,
right past those pearly gates. You know,
I'm just trying to get in it myself.
Okay,
and I have
enough.
No clue, and you are really dragging me down with all the questions about how you get in there. And
I'm
supposed
curious.
To be
I'm a man with questions, okay?
I'm supposed to be evangelizing you, but I'm just doing a history podcast. So Haile Selassie the First, original name Tefari Mekonnen, was born July 23rd, 1892, in Jirsagora, Ethiopia, near Harar, Ethiopia. I'm going to mess a lot of these names up because I have no perspective on how you say these names. I have no clue. And I love y'all. I love y'all, my black brothers and sisters, but I don't know how to do this.
I don't know how to say this shit.
And I'm trying. There was a fucking blackout, and it's been cold, and I don't have water. So
yep.
I'm going to fuck your names up. I'm sorry.
Yep, it's okay. Like, we've been through it lately.
I've been through it. Texas is fucking me right now. Okay.
It's crazy.
As the lights go out, the fuck the light. Okay. So, Tefari, you might know that name. You might that sounds familiar. In Ethiopia, there's the word Ras at this time. Ras means Lord, and his name is first name is Tefari. His name is Tefari Mekonnen, but first name Tefari. When you combine those, what it was commonly called, first name Rastafari. Rastafarianism comes from the name Lord Tefari, Rastafarianism. Ha ha, it's funny. But then you think about how your religious name sounds. Christianity, that's just after a nigga's last name. The Christ, you're Baptist, you're just after a nigga, the Baptist. Judaism, just after a country. How's Americanism sound? Stupid, doesn't it?
Stupid.
Buddhism.
Jainism.
It all looks and sounds wild.
Taoism.
I don't know.
Zoroastrianism.
Well, Taoism is technically the force that controls the Tao.
Yeah,
the Tao.
But the Tao is
kind of a dope
of
thing.
You know, just like a de-anthropomorphized God is the
okay.
Tao.
All right, we're getting too deep in that.
We're getting too deep.
All right. So Tefari, Safari McConan, Rastafari, who, as he'll be later known, was the great grandson of Sali Selassie of Showa, and a son of Ross McConan, a chief advisor to Emperor Menelik II. Not the son of Menelik I, but a descendant of Menelik I. So Tafari was educated by French missionaries. Everybody was impressed with his intellectual abilities. He went on to be the governor of Sidamo, and then on to be the governor of Harar province. And at this time, you have to say the power structure of Ethiopia is kind of built and kind of having kind of three pillars. One, there's the emperor, the kind of Ptolemaic bloodline that is then validated by the church, which is the Coptic Orthodox Church, which is like, you know, like there's Catholics. Do you know Coptic Christians?
Man, I've heard the term.
The Christians from like Alexandria and like Egypt. Okay. Like they can also trace their shit to like Jesus. You know what I mean? So that later becomes the, let me make sure on the naming here, that later then becomes the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church. And that's part of like something that Haile Selassie will do. And then also in the third pillar in that power structure is the aristocrats. At the time, Ethiopia is kind of split into like these, like it's like feudal kingdoms. It's not like a real country. Like most of these places aren't real countries, but like the emperor of course has his power, but then he has to gather these lords, these Rosses, to then they have to give them all stuff, and like they have to gather, and then they go, they've all pledged their allegiance to the Ethiopian Empire, but it's very much a feudal type situation. Mm-hmm. So in 1911, Rastafari, he was married to Wazaro Minin, a great granddaughter of Menelik II. When Menelik II died in 1913, his grandson Lij Yasu succeeded to the throne.
Tafari kind of married into royalty, or he was like close to royalty.
Descended
he was like
from
upper
it.
Class, and he's then he just like kind
no,
of
he's descended
up,
from the Ptolemaic bloodline. Okay. He's in there. From my understanding, I'm pretty sure he's in there. He marries and then like reasserts. Like now it's he's married into, and then he's
consolidate
also like
the royal.
He's
blood.
Also like in there. Yeah, like all he's right. Fucking. He has like a. He has a rightful like heir to the throne. Like he's
okay.
It's there.
He's got a claim.
He got a claim, but he doesn't have as much as claim as Lij Yasu.
Right on.
Lij Yasu has like is you know, Lij Yasu was like a young kid. He was like in his teens when he kind of ascended to the throne. And after his, I think his, what was his grandfather or his, after his grandfather died, Lij Yasu like was in this position of like, where he was like reaching out to like Muslims in this heavily Christian, empire. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, he converted to Islam and mm-hmm. all this shit. And they were talking shit on him. Also he was, and they like kind of got him off the throne because he was like associating too much with Islam and promoting religious tolerance, amongst like Ethiopia, because Ethiopia is at this time, I'm pretty sure still is Muslim and Christian.
Oh,
and
man,
I think there's a lot of Jews there also.
What if a I'm, bad guy.
Yeah.
You
so
know, promoting tolerance and coexistence. What a mm-hmm. what a monster.
So he basically Tafari is part of like this kind of cabal that gets him off of the throne. And Lij Yasu is kind of a foreboding sign because Lij Yasu, of course, was promoting religious tolerance. He also mistrusted colonial powers and was like a early Pan-African supporter of like if I'm correct, Somali rebels against Britain and Italy.
Okay.
Like, but it was the internal struggles and pissing people off internally within Ethiopia made people get rid of him. And by get rid of him, they arrested him. He got thrown off the throne. And after that, Tafari became a rallying point for the Christian resistance, and they deposed Ligiyasu in 1916. Empress Daditu, Menelik II's daughter, there became the empress in 1917. Rastafari was named her regent, and he was the heir apparent to the throne. Now, Zaditu
must have been super young.
No, Zaditu was old. Zaditu was like, okay, yeah, he was like, she was like kind of, older, and it was like, Zaditu was known for being conservative. Rastafari was the progressive, and he became the focus of aspirations of like modernist, younger generation type people, because this is that 1917 period where I think you're talking about the
Beto O'Rourke of 20th century Ethiopia.
He's about making these small progressive changes that don't really attack a lot of the power bases concerning him.
Don't address the underlying systemic rot, but it looks nice on the surface. No,
I mean, I would say Rastafari probably did a little bit more than Beto O'Rourke, because we've all done more than Beto O'Rourke.
Beto O'Rourke did call a lot of old people during the blizzard, so.
He did. Okay. You watch your mouth. All right. I wash my mouth out with soap. And it's that time in like the 19 teens when it's like black people especially are becoming like super like there's in all these countries, really all these countries of like the southern hemisphere are like, you know, black and brown countries. There's like this ascendant class of like young professional type people who are like, under colonialism, they're like, this is wrong. But also underneath this Ethiopian empire, which is at the time, they're going, oh, this is, we would like to change things for the better. I've read some books, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you can address, when you think about Haile Selassie, people have called him the Ethiopian Machiavelli, because he would have these like coups of success, and he like built his whole reign of power basically by going, hey, one motherfucker, like basically by playing people against each other. That's all he does. But he plays people against each other to where they beat each other up, but so they're never as powerful as him. Hmm. It's brilliant. It's a mechanism of power. It's fucked up, but like it's Machiavelli-ish. So in March 1918, this is a story, like one example, March 1918, unpaid soldiers assembled in the capital school in the capital. Selassie used the movement, and they were mad because they were unpaid. He used this movement to get rid of a council of ministers, that were like competing with his power as regent, with the empress, because the empress was following everything that they were saying. And he used those soldiers to get rid of they were complaining. It's like, yeah, we got to get rid of this council of ministers.
So Selassie's basically just like, I understand your plight. I hear your concerns.
He champions.
I understand you want to get paid. Mm-hmm. You know whose fucking fault this is?
It's the ministers, dude.
It's the council of ministers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not my fault. Yeah. You got to take it up with the council of ministers. Yeah. And we should get them to resign. Okay.
And so... they ended up getting rid of those council of ministers, and this group that then disbands, and kind of like this, those people in this group, they kind of disaggregate into history. This group calls itself the Derg. Now, the Derg as a name, I think it means council or committee in like the Ethiopian language, council of committee. I don't know. It's something like that. Well, that name will then come back years later to haunt Haile Selassie. kind of moving forward, in 1923, he had some success. He got Ethiopia into the League of Nations. In 1928, he assumed the title of Negus, which means king. And then 2 years later, after that, 1930, he was crowned emperor on November the 2nd, 1930, and took the name Haile Selassie, which means might of the Trinity.
That's pretty sick.
He, uh,
That's a pretty sick might of the Trinity. Might like, of the sword of the Holy Trinity. That's pretty sweet.
It's pretty fucking sick. There's a lot of good names in here. He visited Jerusalem, Rome, Paris, and London. It became the first Ethiopian ruler.
Might as well
ruler.
Name yourself like Jesus Christ
you
bicep.
Might of the Trinity, brother. Might of the goddamn Trinity, brother. So he went on to visit Jerusalem, Rome, Paris, and London, and became the first Ethiopian ruler to ever grow abroad. Like Ethiopians, they're like, nah, we don't really
super
fuck with outside. Yeah.
Then, okay.
And he's seen, and he's and his title at this time is called, you know, because he's kind of a king within all these kind of feudal lords, all the feudal Rosses, if you want to, if you per se. His title is King of Kings, and it's called, and that in that in that language or Ethiopian language is Nagusa Nagasht, the King of Kings, which is for every now and then, every 5 to 10 years, I want to say, there will be a conscious rapper who wants to reframe the N word, reframe the word nigga, and then they'll learn about the Ethiopian version of Nigos, which means kings. And they'll try to be like, nah, we're meant to be kings. They'll get that off. Like they'll be like, Kendrick Lamar is the last person who did it, like 5 years ago, where it's like, see, negus means king. It's a common ploy of the conscious rapper to tail to Ethiopian history and go, nah, negus. No, we're not calling each other niggas. We're calling each other neguses.
What's up, king?
Yeah, what's up, king?
It's a while. King, my kings.
Yeah, right. My kings, okay. Huh? Cool. So, the Ethiopian, like, his, like, ceremony where he was crowned was, like, reported around the world in terms of, like, it was reported around the world. People sent, like correspondence to it. They were dignitaries from like all of the European powers, because he's sitting in this weird part of the world. He's sitting in the Horn of Africa, where there's Italian Somaliland, Italian Somalia, I'm pretty sure, Italian Somalia, and then there's British Somalia, and then if I'm correct, there's Djibouti, which is French out cave, and then Eritrea is like something different also, like there is a colonial thing where he's like around him, where he's also just trying to get to, like, he's trying to get a seaport on the Red Sea so he can like have access to that seaport, and that the Red Sea,
to
and
get
that straight
cut of the, like, the global trade passing through. And
yeah,
the Suez Canal is open by now, so if you're a stopping point along the Red Sea on the way to Suez, then you're gonna make a pretty penny. You know, you're gonna do all right
along that Horn of Africa. Oh, then he also, like, there's like at, in the at, also and that's it's super. That's like his whole goal, but they're not, they never give it to him because they're like they
don't get ahead of yourself, kid.
Yeah, like
you
after World War II,
you can't sit with the big boys.
Yeah, know? After World War II, there's different, like, and then there's, you know, so they kind of fuck with them, but that's a whole different. That we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. The only way, like, in the Ethiopia at this time is basically like through Djibouti, like through Harar. And it's like a train. It's like, and then you get into Ethiopia, and then you get into the kingdom of the Empire of Ethiopia at the time.
Have you ever had Ethiopian food?
No, I have had this Ethiopian sauce that Mahoney made. It was fucking good, dude. Shout out Mahoney Schleshy, man. That's our local Ethiopian.
I hate
to call him our local Ethiopian. He's not even local anymore. That's fucked up. I don't know.
Ethiopian food's pretty good. Like, there's this restaurant in Austin that we went to, and it was just like you order a bunch of shit on, like, and it comes in a big serving plate, and then they give you, like, I would call them tortillas. They're probably not tortillas. It's
not.
Just like little bread, and that's like your utensil, and you pick it up with the bread and eat it. It was pretty good, actually. I wish I remembered the place. I think it was near Cap City. I don't know if it still is. It might be closed. Yeah. Due to COVID, but this is a fond memory that I have of my time at the Texas Tribune Festival, and I just wanted to share it with you and our listeners. So,
all right. Thank you. So I don't know how much they paid you for that plug, but that was kind of weird. Also, like, the Lucy's is pretty good here in Houston. Lucy's.
Lucy's?
I'm pretty sure that's the name of the Ethiopian spot here. That's, like, big. All right. Back to Haile Selassie.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, luxurious 14-day ceremony. Like, that's how long his coronation ceremony was, 14 days. It was, like, super dope. There's pictures of it. It's, like, the most jewels, the most fabulous shit. This is inspiring for black people all across the world. The international press made fun of it. They're, like, they're like little fuck-ups. And the international press, like, especially, they're dicks already, but they're especially dicks when it's, like, people of color that think that they better than me. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna be a dick to this guy. So kind of moving forward, 1931, I promulgated a new constitution, which like limited the power, like which gave like a parliament, but it was like a very limited parliament. And Haile Selassie was in effect the Ethiopian government. He was like in charge of everything. The constitution also he like established provincial schools. He like strengthened the police force. It progressively outlawed feudal taxation, which is like how the aristocrats got their money. Yeah. So they could like how the Rosses across the country, the basic like the weird kind of warlord governors, how they could raise their personal armies and kind of keep their own personal power. He kind of destroyed that at the time, or led to basically becoming nothingness. And it increased the authority of the central government, and, you know, and just and kind of put all power into his hands.
That's kind of a mixed bag, I guess, yeah. Coming from, like, you know, my orientation, where mm-hmm. it's like schools are good, strengthen police force, like, I guess if you need it.
Yeah.
Feudal taxation, he's like taking a stab at corporate Ethiopia, but as like a federal figure, you know what I mean? If it's like he it's usually you kind of want those things to be bottom up, but this is like top down taking a swipe right at him, you know, which maybe there's something to be said that he's the only one that could have done that given those situations. Is it like there was no organic anti-corporate movement or anti-aristocrat movement, and true. So he's like, no, I'm just going to do it unilaterally because I recognize it for what it is.
There's an anti-aristocrat movement. Again, he is the kind of the progressive like figure. Mm-hmm. So there is, that does exist. Asafa Wilson Asarate in the book basically kind of plays it in that he's kind of doing a Machiavellian play to gain more power underneath him. And he is the only, he kind of is funneling himself to being the only pillar. But, you know, at the time, taking the pillar that mm-hmm. was the fucking Ethiopian aristocrats, and now funneling under, and like all putting all of that power underneath himself.
Yeah.
In terms of a bureaucracy and then a national army. And we'll see how that works. Okay,
right on.
And then we get to the Wall incident. There was an Italian Ethiopian treaty of 1928. This like defining the border between Italian Somaliland, or I thought it was Somaliland, and Ethiopia. In 1930, Italy built a fort at the Wall Oasis in eastern Ogaden, which is like southern Ethiopia. Well within the Ethiopian border, there was kind of getting through the story. There was a border surveying commission. They were confronted by a group of kind of Italian and Somalian soldiers. The Brits who were with the Ethiopian surveying group wanted to avoid international incidents, so they left. The Ethiopian stayed, and then from December 5th and through 7th of 1934, he said, she said thing. Anyway, they have a clash on the border. It's probably the Italians because they're fucking deep in Ethiopian territory and they're already a colonial force.
Italy in the 30s is not the most trustworthy.
Oh, yeah. No, we're going to get to the Italians. Right.
Like, so, I don't know.
Probably the Italians attacked, and then approximately in the end, 107 Ethiopians were killed. And then 50 Italians and Somalis were killed. This gives a pretext to Mussolini, El Duce, to invade. It's Il Duce. Il Duce. I don't know how to fucking say it.
I don't know if it's calling him the Deuce feels wrong, but also it does right in some it ways. Does. You know?
I mean, that's like what he likes to call himself.
Deuce. He's like the shit that Italy took. You know,
it was a pretty big shit on Ethiopia in particular.
Dropping deuces.
Dropping deuces. So the French and the English basically have a free hand to Italy, hoping they will side with them. And in the upcoming confrontation that everybody knows is about to happen with Germany, because the Italians and the Germans have, like, they're having a row. Hitler and Il Duce and Mussolini did not like each other for a good moment. They were, like, kind of, there was, like, some concern over the annexation of Austria. So, like, the French and the English are like, yo, fuck with us. We're not going to let you fuck up those black. You can fuck up those black people all you want, as long as when the big one comes, you're on our side again.
Yeah.
And that, well, as we know, that didn't work out.
Man, Europe's a clusterfuck. Yeah. Just say the least. Like,
clusterfuck. Yeah. On October 3rd, 1935, Italian armed forces from Eritrea invaded Ethiopia, thus starting the second Italian Abyssinian War. Italy's still angry about the first Italian-Ethiopian War, 1895 to 1896, which ended in Italian defeat, and they're still like ashamed about that. Italy is trying to claim Ethiopia as its protectorate, and they're trying to create their whole kind of a empire that now stretches from, I think, from Libya, that was stretched from Libya down into like Eastern Africa.
This is all like during the scramble for Africa in the late 19th century, isn't it?
That was back then, like 1895, 1896.
Yeah, yeah.
This is now.
Yeah.
They're trying, you know, because they're fascists. They're trying to like make Italy great again. So
exactly.
So they need to like, you know, recreate the Roman Empire, which was a lot about. It was like all Il Duce used to talk about.
Well, if you want to rebuild the Roman Empire, the first thing you need to do is to conquer new territories,
exactly,
like Rome did, and so that's
and get too spread out and then get killed by the people that you were paying to protect
exactly.
you
exactly by the great. Quote unquote savage hordes
great. So Haile Selassie leads the resistance, is on the front lines, he like fires machine guns.
You showed me that picture of him on the book cover, and I was like, there are two things that this man does not do, and that is smoke weed and fire machine guns.
I
was wrong about one of them. So
Then the book, in the book, it was fire a machine gun at aircraft. He did gonna hop on an aircraft gun once. And there are other things in the book where like he didn't fight. So I'm not going to give him the most fighting ass.
Okay. All right.
But he did like lead a resistance and planning and stuff and fought against the Italians. But it's kind of pointless because it's Italian tank and machine guns versus spears and swords with some bullets and like, not a lot though. Italian troops.
You want to have a thumb war with?
Yeah,
me?
No, that's great. Let's
no,
do a
I
thumb
have
war.
A gun.
Yeah.
Okay. I will shoot you before that. I will win the thumb war. Okay.
Italian troops. This is a war where Italian troops were used mustard gas a lot, in violation of the Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, like all those things added up. In May 1936, he was like basically he was forced into exile. Some people would never forgive him for going in exile and leaving and fleeing Ethiopia. Also, on his way out of Ethiopia, Lij Ayusu, who had been in prison this whole time, just ends up dead.
Okay.
just ends up dead okay. All of a sudden. So like that's the thing. Like I get Haile Selassie because there's a lot of stuff later, and it's like this. He's a kind of an iconic figure for Black people in the 20s and 30s, and like this kind of in like colonialism and segregation, all that type of stuff. A Black king, that's amazing. But then like he is just doing Machiavellian games to maintain his power.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, it is kind of a wild vibe. this kind of is the incident he's probably the most known for. He then goes to the League of Nations and he appeals for help in like his most memorable speech. It's in Geneva on June 30th, 1936. He goes, this is excerpts from the speech. Speeches, I assert that the issue before the assembly today is not sought merely a question of the settlement in the matter of Italian aggression. It is a question of collective security, of the very existence of the League, of the trust placed by states and international treaties. If the value of promises made to small states that their integrity and independence shall be respected and assured, in a word, it is international morality that is at stake. Ending with, he kind of said this is his most like prophetic line. It is us today. It will be you tomorrow, to a collection of European of the League of Nations in 1936, mm-hmm. which motherfucker was right. Motherfucker was really right.
Was like, not wrong.
Yeah, it was yeah. not wrong about that. So getting more into the Italian occupation of Ethiopia, Haile Selassie, he leaves and he's in exile. And during the Italian occupation, he lives in England in Bath, which is a town in England. I think it's the western part of England. I don't know. He's basically broke. He's fucking broke. It's like he's kind of surviving on donations from like Ethiopian like aristocrats or people who have went abroad. It's more of a desperate situation, but he endures it with like some quiet dignity. Meanwhile, in Ethiopia, by all estimates, hundreds of thousands of Ethiopian civilians die as a result of the Italian invasion, including during the reprisal of the Yekatat 12 massacre in Addis Ababa, in which as many as 30,000 civilians were killed. The Yekatat 12 massacre, led by the Italian black shirts, It was a massacre and imprisonment of Ethiopians by the occupation forces following an attempted assassination of Marshal Rodolfo Graziani, real dick, the Marquis of Negete and the Viceroy of Italian East Africa. I think he is the Viceroy of Italian Africa. Mm-hmm. Never mind. A 2017 history of the massacre estimated that 19,200 people were killed. 19,200 people were killed, and that's going to equal 20% of Addis Ababa at the time. So
Jesus,
it's characterized in the book as them just Italian black shirts just going through Addis Ababa and just shooting down any person, men, women, and children in the street. Just like, and there's like just bodies strewn all over the street. This is also a time because what happened was it was like some Eritreans or Ethiopians. I think it was Eritreans that like they went and they like opposed and they got into like this ceremony that the Italians were having, and they tried to kill some Italian higher ups. They ended up failing, and then that guy who's like that Graziani guy fucking just scorched her. Burned, just tried to kill everybody. Tried to kill men, just killed a bunch of men, women, children. 19,000 low estimates. Some people say 30,000. It's just like kind of continues this way. In May 1937, Graziani ordered 297 monks of the monastery of Debris Libranos and 23 other individuals suspected of complicity in that earlier. Assassination attempt or the, you know, supporting rebels. He ordered 297 monks shot. And then over 100 deacons and students were executed. Several hundred monks were sent to concentration camps. There were some war crimes on the Ethiopian side, but it was like mainly against like Italian citizens and like Eritrean Askaris. Which is one of my like favorite words that I learned recently. Askaris means it means colonial, like black Africans. I think it's Arab. It can be an Arab word also. people who fight for colonial forces under colonial armies. And it's also something nowadays that they use in like London for like police. That's the Askar.
Askaris.
Yeah, like that's the Askar right there.
I like that.
Yeah, you know I mean, because they're colonial police, you're enforcing colonial rule on us. It's a,
or like the Uncle Toms.
Yeah.
Askaris.
Yeah. The Askaris, okay. Dog. Everybody can be an Askari. Mm-hmm. In the right position. They're all Askaris. All right. So World War II, then the commences, right? Because we're in that era. That kind of turns the situation around for Haile Selassie. Britain gets involved in the war. He secures British assistance in forming an army of Ethiopian exiles in Sudan. British and Ethiopian forces invade Ethiopia in January 1941. They recaptured Addis Ababa several months later. This is the part of history where Haile Selassie teams up with the Gideon Force, which is a force under Ord Wingate, who's like the super British Zionist, unshaven, didn't shower guy, only bathed by dipping his butt in an oasis every now and then.
Okay, so just you know, like just, the party, just a cool guy.
Yeah, just the most British ass World War II ass nigga.
Ord Wingate at your service.
That exact vibe. You're there. So it was made up of 50 officers, 20 British NCOs, 800 fully trained Sudanese troops, and 800 partially trained Ethiopian regulars. And in total, they numbered like 2,000 men, and they had 18,000 camels meant for transport. They were like, this is iconic thing of like Haile Selassie, this Ptolemaic bloodline king returning on camels through the desert to reclaim his kingdom. They didn't do much fighting, though. Like, they weren't like the main force that took it, but like they came through the Sudanese desert, like through South Sudan, through Ethiopia, returning to Addis Ababa.
Wait, then who the fuck is Gideon?
It's the Gideon Force is like, biblical kind of thing. He's making that Ord Wingate is because of Haile Selassie's Ptolemaic bloodline is championing him. I forgot what Gideon is. I don't really know what it is.
But it's like a biblical.
It's a biblical
to a figure in the Bible.
Yeah, it's a
okay.
Let me just, I can look this up right now. And that don't tell me nothing. I'm not going into who Gideon was right now. We're moving on. But it's like a biblical thing, a reference to the, you know, of course, supposedly, Haile Selassie being related to Jesus himself, or the Bible and David and all that stuff and Solomon. Mm. Not supposedly, I think he actually is. Although he was like, then he was reinstated as emperor after like the British kind of took Italy from after the British took Ethiopia from the Italians. So he's reinstated as emperor. He tried to recreate the authority he previously had, and like the British after World War II give him his country, and then they also give him Eritrea. So he has Eritrea. And he has Ethiopia, and you know it's not. I'm pretty sure like ancient Ethiopian Empire also included Somalia, but I don't quote me on that. He again tries to implement social, economic, and educational reforms, but like not power reforms. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like he's doing good stuff, but it has nothing to do with this power.
Yeah.
I'm
still gonna keep the parliament as weak as possible.
Yeah,
but also. You get some good shit, so don't worry too much about it.
He does this thing where he leaves out rebel leaders who fought the Italian occupation out of his rule. Like he just leaves them out. Like they get basically nothing.
You can't do that.
And
but you shouldn't.
He turns to people that he probably was more kind of close to or had more of a knowledge, a common shared knowledge with. He turns to the people who were aristocrats before, like not aristocrats, not the Razas, but that new kind of class of like motherfuckers like there who are like educated and like, you know, the new bureaucrats and shit. He turns to them And but the problem with them is that some of them, a lot of them, have been either like rich people in exile, or they were collaborators. So that's like his government's all made up of like people who like didn't even fight in this war or fought for basically collaborated.
Yeah.
After the war, after World War II.
Snakes in the grass.
Uh-huh. He sends troops to the Korean War. Like, it's kind of his kind of statement that he's like part of the UN, you know, as a senior statesman. So he's sending troops abroad. This is a time when the UK pulls out and the US steps in.
Yeah.
In 1955.
It's because like Truman had his whole thing
about
Korea where he was like, it can't be a US invasion or US can't be the only ones fighting this. It's got to be the UN.
It'd be the
because
UN.
We went as far as to build this whole new international organization. And if we don't use it, it'll just prove how inept in an international organization. It was like a blanket for the US to intervene.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine that Truman was like, thank you, Haile Selassie, at least making this an international brigade, you know?
There were he becomes like the senior statesman in like in international stuff, and it seems how it affects Ethiopia later is interesting. So in 1955 he granted a new constitution giving him as much power as the previous one. The Ethiopian government continues. It continues to be an expression of Haile Selassie's personal authority. He was known for having like this impressive memory. Like he would be able to remember little details of little things of any, like across the government spectrum. But like, you can't run a government like that. And then he also did he also had this kind of trait of this thing called, I forgot the name for it, and I think it was called Shamshir, but I'm not too sure about that. It was basically he hired and fired people. So once he hired you, you got too powerful, you got too popular. Oh, now all of a sudden you're a governor in a far-flung province. Mm-hmm. Oh, you just did something really good and everybody loves you. Now all of a sudden you're the fucking ambassador to Fiji.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's constantly doing that. They kind of talk about the Ethiopian government at this time being there's the lower garage and there's the higher garage. The lower garage is like the House of Representatives. The higher garage is the Senate and all like the it's like his like Council of Ministers. And you just kind of transition between the two. like you just kind of, it's a merry-go-round, you going around.
You keep it mobile. There's like the inverse of what is it called? Too good to promote.
Yeah.
It's like you're actually too good, so I'm going to promote you for that exact reason to get you away from whatever entrenched power you have or whatever popular support you have. I'm gonna get you the fuck out of here.
So basically, like during this time, there are people like, yo, you kind of maybe need to transform the government. Maybe we need to like chill out. You know what I mean? Maybe we need to like you become a constitutional monarchy. That stuff is, it's rising up at this time. Overt opposition to his rule surfaced in December 1960, when a dissident wing of the army secured control of Addis Ababa, but was dislodged by loyalist elements. And this is like the first, like not the first one, but this was like a big, this is 1960 is a big year because it's like, this is like the army is now they have the elements within them that are beefing with you and it's not good. Also,
you can't just fire the Council of Ministers this time. You gotta actually do something about it.
You gotta do, and it doesn't seem like it's, God, the government did work. Like it was very slow. Like he would do shit that was nice, but didn't make any sense on like every college student that went out of country to go to school. He would meet with them personally. And when they came back, also, if you were a tourist to Ethiopia at this time, everybody met Haile Selassie.
Okay.
It's like, yo, but then people are going to start starving later.
How many translators did he have?
I don't know. Either he spoke all the languages or there just weren't that many tourists to Ethiopia, which actually.
Yeah, there's got to be one or the other.
It's one or the other.
The logistics of this just don't make sense.
It's a lot. Okay, so Also, on September 1st, 1961, the ELF was founded, the Eritrean Liberation Front, under the leadership of Hamed Idris Awate.
A.K.A. ELF.
Yeah, yeah, which is not a great name. Not great. And they would wage an armed struggle for independence from 1961 and then all the way to 1991 when they finally secured their their independence. I think they were. I don't know about them guys. Yeah. I have some bad. I don't. There's something bad happening in Eritrea, and I don't. You know, I don't know if these guys are good, and I don't at all.
I don't know what the schism is between Eritrea and Ethiopia, but I do know the only thing I know is that Eritrea is its own country now. But I don't know.
This is why or how. And no, they won their war for independence in 1991. In 1962, after they tried to wage a struggle, armed struggle for armed independence, that's when Haile Selassie unilaterally dissolved the Eritrean parliament and annexed the country. So, like, this is what I'm saying. Like, great, like, incredible, like, figure for black people, but, like, in terms of, like, a real deal like ruler.
Yeah.
If you're a Eritrean, he's not a great guy for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he's a politician.
He's the Ethiopian Machiavelli. You know what I mean? Haile Selassie played an important role in also establishing the Organization of African Unity in 1963. This is the precursor to the African Union. African Union, of course, is headquartered in Addis Ababa for this reason. He plays a fatherly role, to like, you know, people would leave and he'd be like, son, my son, stay, this is important. Like, he was the head guy of this African state, this African states, kind of collective. And that was like kind of like one of the highlights of his rule, like kind of establishing that.
African Union is still very active.
It's very active, but let me not talk shit about the African Union. I don't really, let me read a book on that before I fucking go deep. So he also, this time, the kind of Americans are like kind of being like iffy on if they're going to give them money and like give them development funds and shit. And then he'll like flirt with non-aligned shit and then like kind of pull back and flirt with it. And it basically like he just kind of playing. He starts playing the game of like, am I non-aligned? I'm gonna visit Moscow once or twice. I'm gonna visit. You know what I mean? So, and then in 1966, Haile Selassie visits Jamaica, and this is probably why most people know Haile Selassie is through the medium of Rastafarianism. He's particularly popular in terms of Rastafarianism, from my understanding, because Marcus Garvey makes him popular, because then Marcus Garvey's Pan-African sentiment. There needs to be a king of all these African peoples. He looks to Africa. He sees this nigga draped in gold and gold and diamonds. And he's like, yo, Haile Selassie, who's descended from the Ptolemaic bloodline, you're going to be our king. And so people in Jamaica, in this like anti-colonial religion, they don't want to be confined to like the Babylon ways, which are the current world's ways. So they grow their heads out, grow their dreads out, and you know, smoke weed. Like, that's Rastafarianism, and that places Haile Selassie as the, according to your interpretation of Rastafarian thought, he's the second coming or he's a prophet, depending on interpretation. He denied this so many times. he denied it so many times. Like, he denied it. And he was like, people were like, cause he was Christian himself. And like the Coptic Christian church or the Ethiopian Coptic Christian church would be like, yeah, like, you know, you're not God. Right. And he'd be like, yeah, no,
yes,
I am.
I know.
Because that's one pillar of his power. He has to keep those people happy. So he's like, I'm not God, yeah, dude. I need you guys to know that I don't think I'm God, because I want you. We got to stay in power.
That would be such a weird position to be in. Like, if everybody's trying to admit, like, no, like, if you didn't want to be the prophet, but everybody was trying to make you be the prophet. Mm-hmm. Like, no, this is your burden, man. This is you. And it's like, I'm not this guy that I know you want me to be him, but it's not me, man.
It's a weird thing also where it's a, but then like, you can't argue with Rastafarians. You just can't. Cause like the people would be,
I don't even know why I would
in the book, the person who wrote this, has like knew Haile Selassie. He had met, the person that met Haile Selassie like various times and like would face to face with Rastafarians and be like, yo, I've met, he's not God. And then Rastafarians, something about Rastafarianism makes you wise as fuck. Cause they'd just be like, but the nose is right before the eyes, but sometimes I don't see it. Damn, nigga. Don't hit me with those. Don't hit me like with that saying like that. Don't do that. This kind of leads to 1966.
Also, wouldn't the Lord be humble? Wouldn't the second coming of Christ? Wouldn't that incarnation? Wouldn't he be full of humility? So much humility to the point that he might deny he is who he knows he is, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's all pillar of it. It's all part of the grand design. It's all part of the plan, man.
In 1966, when he visits Jamaica, he gets off the plane. People, like, it was just, like, all Rastafarians there to meet him because it's, like, the second coming of Christ, dude. Like, fuck yeah, I'm going to the airport. I'm taking off work. Mm-hmm. I'm going to the airport. And people, like, said, like, yeah, they saw fucking... They saw holes in his hands. Like, people said that.
Damn.
So, like, I think
they were just trying to get in the papers.
I mean, look, I don't know, maybe. Dude. I don't know. One of the people there was this girl named Rita Anderson. And she was a young black girl. And she so impressed by Haile Selassie. And so blown away by his presence, when seeing him on a visit to Jamaica, to Kingston, then goes back to her boyfriend, and tells him about seeing the King of Kings, seeing Haile Selassie. Her boyfriend, Rita Anderson's boyfriend is Bob Marley. And that's like one of the pillars. She's one of the people who got Bob Marley into Rastafarianism. He was hanging around Rastafari at the time, but she's also one of the figures that pushed him into that world and into that life, of my understanding, if the book is correct.
It all comes together, man.
Or if the thing I watched on it is correct. So
the Lord works in mysterious ways.
He does.
Okay.
He does. So here's the thing. Haile Selassie just kind of ruling. He just kind of doing his thing. But like, Ethiopia is kind of fucked. It's like, it's not doing great. It's like there was a famine. There was starvation going on, and in the government had to go up this incredible chain to get anything really done to Haile Selassie. And it's just not an efficient way to manage a government.
Too much red
all.
Tape.
Yeah, too much red tape. Too much. There's only one tape, and only one person has scissors.
He's
the only person to cut the shit. So in 1974. During a famine, worsening unemployment and political stagnation, the political stagnation of his government, units in the army mutinied. It's called the creeping coup. It's like termed a creeping coup because it lasted for several months. They deposed Haile Selassie and established a provisional military government. And the people who did that, the group that did that, who mutinied, called itself the Derg, the kind of referencing back to the first Derg, which they espoused like a Marxist ideology. And there was a jostle between Marxists and moderates, and the Marxists won out. Haile Selassie was kept under house arrest.
And Gerald Ford shit his pants.
Okay. Haile Selassie was kept under house arrest in his own palace, where he spent the remainder of his life. He died on August 27, 1975 in the National Palace. Some people say complications from a prostate surgery, and other people say strangulation. Probably strangulation.
What, by like a guard or
caretaker
or something?
Yeah, by the derg.
Oh.
By the derg.
Who, oh, shit.
Yeah. And you know,
so these are not just your Twitter Marxists.
These are the dudes.
Real
and
deal.
The derg then propagates what is known. Let me just get this stat. The derg propagates what's called the Red Terror, in Ethiopia, nice. which is a time between I think 1976 and 1977 in Ethiopia and Eritrea, that estimates between 30,000 to 750,000 people were killed over the course of, you know, the Red Terror, or they call it the Kashubi.
Wait, 30,000 or 300,000?
They say so. I'm just reading Wikipedia right now.
Because that's probably derg numbers.
Derg is like 30,000. It's probably closer to 750,000 people.
People in Ethiopia died from, how much of that is famine and how much of that is
look purges? I didn't do a dirt we didn't do a dirt podcast we did a, okay. We did a Highest Lost podcast.
Damn, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, and then it makes Highest Lost look like the Christ.
Yeah, like, man, like, we thought we had it bad.
Yeah, like he left the dirt came really.
Yeah,
the Derg came, which is also the worst name.
It's not great. I didn't want to insult the language.
No,
the Derg.
It does sound like a South Park episode, but let's not get into that. So that, in essence, is the rule, the life of Haile Selassie. It's an interesting life because he's not somebody of. It's weird to think about like him and try to think of his mind state because he's not somebody who is of the like of a, it's a black mind state, it's an African mind state, but it's not like the way he's pre all this. He's Abyssinian, he's Ethiopian Empire. Like that's how he thinks. And it's interesting to see like it was interesting to, he was like the last vestige of like this far this foregone ancient beautiful Africa that existed, which was real. This is a real place, but yeah,
I kind of see what you mean about the mindset where it's like a lot of other people are coming to these thoughts organically and through their own experience arriving at those conclusions, and Haile Selassie's like, yeah, I've been in it.
I don't know if I would even say that. I think it's more of, I don't know, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm cross-pollinating thoughts. I don't know. But it seems like he just was, you know, he's black, but he's almost like before anything, like people say, oh, I'm black. Before anything, it was like, almost like, I am a Solomonic bloodline Abyssinian. You know what I mean? Like, and like, that's his reality. And it's linking to something that I guess in our kind of minds in this current world is something that's kind of been lost. You know what I mean? Like these ancient African kingdoms.
Just like a concrete link to antiquity.
Yeah, he's like a concrete link to antiquity that black people could see at the time. So I get why people are like, yo, Haile Selassie, King of Kings, Negus and Nagast, all this stuff. I get it. In the book that I read, and you know, feel free to recommend other books. I'm interested to read. I love, you know, I'm reading now. I'm a reading guy. But it seemed of course there were great triumphs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then there were also like, he was a complex character that more evoked the Ethiopian Machiavelli term. That in my mind, I was like, yeah, this dude's playing people against each other. He's fucking doing all this different stuff. Voila, you guys both are fucked, and now I'm king. Like.
And he ruled for 60 years.
Ruled for 60 years?
Roughly. Probably closer to 50, but, you know, 50 to 60 years. This is a good reign. That's a good run. All right.
No, it was about 45, because it was 30. It was 30. 1930 became king.
When was 1917? Was he a regent?
No, 1917 was like, I think that's when he became, no, I thought he became regent. Married. Yeah, but we'll, look,
50
yeah,
years. 50. We'll call it 50.
We'll call it around 50. We'll call it around 50 because he was a regent. Okay, we'll do that. Mm-hmm. And guys, that's been our podcast on the King of Kings, the Negus and Negast, the Might of the Trinity, Haile Selassie. We want to thank you guys for listening. Henry, who are we doing next week?
Next week, it was supposed to be the start of women. It is the start of Women's History Month. Mm-hmm. We are now a week behind because of the blizzard and everything. We were going to do the Western Closure as a bonus episode, but shit got fucked up because our power is out for a fucking week. Mm-hmm. Anyways, next week, we're going to be looking at Marcus Garvey, and then we're going to start Women's History Month. We're going to start Women's History Month like a week after it's occurred with Angela Davis.
Yeah, though, we make, you know, the power knocked us out because America has a shitty infrastructure problem. And,
you know, but some billionaires saved some money.
Yeah.
So
great.
All good. You know, great. All's
great, guys. You can follow us at Hardfire History on Instagram and Facebook, HFH Podcast on Twitter. You can follow me at Joshua B. Stokes on Instagram and Twitter, and Joshua Stokes on Facebook. Henry, where can they follow you at?
I'm just Henry E. Price on Instagram, just Henry Price on Facebook.
Guys, thank you again for listening to the podcast. You're beautiful. Don't let anybody ever tell you different.
Mm-hmm. Spread the word. Tell your friends. All that shit. Do it.
No,
please.
Yeah, no, but also be beautiful. That's what I'm doing.
And stay safe.
Stay safe out there.
And call your fucking grandma. All right?
Okay. All right. All right. Personal issues on the other side of the phone. Okay. All right. We'll see you guys next time. All right. Bye, guys.